This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In some of the top stories we're following here at NPR News today, France and Germany have declared they are determined to avoid a war in Iraq. Today, the two nations blocked a NATO decision on whether to begin preparations for a supporting role in such a war. Nick Spicer is in Paris. He'll have details later today. Also, thousands of people are demonstrating here in the nation's capital. The 30th anniversary of Roe v. Wade decision is today. Both abortion rights supporters and abortion foes are voicing their views in the freezing cold. NPR's Jackie Northam is in Washington, and we'll have those stories. You can hear them later. Coming up on All Things Considered. And we turn our attention now to the global arms race. Since the North Korean crisis started, we've heard of a variety of countries rethinking their need for weapons of mass destruction, in particular for nuclear weapons. Gary Mulholland is director of the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control, and he joins us by phone from his office here in Washington. Gary, good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you.
North Korea has recently bowed out of some non-proliferation agreements. Has this provoked some other countries to consider following suit?
Well, everybody's obviously watching North Korea and what happens. North Korea took advantage of the non-proliferation treaty by getting the benefits under the treaty up to the point where the North Koreans were ready to cross the line to actually possessing nuclear weapons and then dropped out. This shows everybody in the world that the non-proliferation treaty has weaknesses and can be exploited. And what we have to hope is that other countries don't follow this example.
We can hope, but other countries are certainly thinking about it. Strictly in the North Korean situation, you would have South Korea, Japan, and even Taiwan.
That's true. I think if for some reason we wind up with this Korean crisis so that the whole Korean peninsula would go nuclear, that is nuclear weapon, then I think the question of U.S. guarantees of Japan's security would come into play, and the Japanese would have to ask themselves whether they can rely on us or whether they ought to get a nuclear capability of their own. I think I don't believe we'll ever get to that point. I think that we'll be able to deal with the North Korean crisis such that the peninsula is not nuclearized. But there's no guarantee that it couldn't happen. It's just that I think we'll be successful in preventing it.
If you have questions about the spread of nuclear weapons and the possible acceleration of that spread, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And, Gary, we see other places in the world that are also rethinking the entire question of nuclear weapons. Lately, there's been a lot of discussion within Egypt about that idea.
Yes, Egypt has a chemical weapon program. Egypt also has an aggressive missile program. But for Egypt to try to get nuclear weapons would be a serious change in the Middle East. And of course, our relationship with Egypt, that is the U.S. relationship, is pretty strong. We supply Egypt with essential foreign aid. I think that it's unlikely that Egypt would succeed in going down that path. But we have to acknowledge that Israel has nuclear weapons, and that's a bad example for everybody else in the Middle East.
And from the Egyptian point of view, they know Israel has nuclear weapons, and they don't see any balancing strategic factor that gives them the same kind of leverage that nuclear weapons give Israel.
That's true. Israel has nuclear weapons. Both the Iraqis and the Iranians are trying to get nuclear weapons. I think both countries see the other as a threat, and of course also see Israel as a threat. But when you consider the whole question of Middle East security, Israel now is under attack from suicide bombers, and its nuclear arsenal is not helping it at all deter that. So you have to really ask whether in this new age of terrorism and sort of low-technology attacks by human suicide bombers, whether the nuclear answer really makes much sense.
The one other country that I'm aware of where this has recently come under public discussion is Brazil.
Yes, there has been at least one voice in Brazil saying that the Brazilians should reconsider the question, but actually Brazil and Argentina are success stories. So those countries both flirted with nuclear weapons, and they turned back because they had changes in their governments which produced governments that wanted to get rid of the nuclear weapons. and also because of a lot of pressure from the United States and the rest of the West on their industries. We basically told them if they want to get high technology and join the rest of the world, they have to give up their nukes, and the argument worked.
Our phone number again, 800-989-8255, and let's get a phone call from Barney, who's on the line with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. The question and concern I have actually is with Korea, you know, deciding to kind of just unilaterally just say, oh, well, we're not going to pay attention to that treaty.
North Korea, you mean?
I'm sorry?
North Korea?
North Korea, yeah, I'm sorry. With the nuclear proliferation, isn't it just basically kind of a follow-up to what our president has done in some instances, because we don't particularly, it doesn't suit us, we're not going to agree with it, so therefore any country now who suddenly feels a threat says, well, whatever we agreed to before is null and void because our condition has changed. So what good really are any of these treaties?
Gary Mulholland?
Well, the main problem with most treaties is that they're not self-enforcing. That is, a treaty really serves as kind of an arguing point diplomatically. You go to a country and say, look, you agreed to do X, Y, and Z, and we're appealing to your sense of pride and your international reputation to keep your word, because if you're not going to keep your word now, then why should anyone make an agreement with you later? That works for responsible countries that have many international relationships. The problem is that you have countries like North Korea, which are pretty isolated, and for them to break a treaty obligation is basically cost-free or almost cost-free.
A quick follow-up, if I could.
Go ahead.
Then, you know, again, I have to go back to, you know, our situation with our president, because we have the biggest stick on the block. We tend to want to make the rules, and you know, we'll decide what we're going to do or not based on our power. So does that not open up, you know, to get a level playing field? The less powerful countries have to do something to try to maintain some sort of balance.
Well, Gary, in answering that question, let me just turn it slightly. North Korea is obviously being treated differently by the Bush administration than is Iraq. One of them, you have to assume, already has a couple, this according to Secretary of State Colin Powell, a couple of nuclear weapons. The other does not. Doesn't that suggest that if you've got nuclear weapons, you're going to be treated better by the United States?
There are a couple of differences between Iraq and North Korea. One, of course, is that Iraq lost a war and promised to disarm and has never kept that promise. So the legal predicate for dealing with Iraq is different from the legal predicate for dealing with North Korea. But the other half of the question, do you treat people better if they have nuclear weapons than if they don't? I'm afraid the lesson is that once you get across that nuclear line and you can use a credible nuclear threat against other countries, then people handle you with care. And it is true now, strangely enough, that if you look at America's conventional weaponry, hardly anybody in the world can fight us anymore with conventional weapons. And so if you want to oppose the United States and do so by force, you're sort of remitted to an unconventional approach, either terrorism or a weapon of mass destruction. And I'm afraid that trend is going to be with us for a while.
Barney, thanks very much for the question.
Thank you.
Gary, and your point reminds me of, I think it was at the end of the Gulf War, a Pakistani general was asked, what lessons do you derive from the ability of the United States and the West to smash Iraq that quickly? And he said, never fight the United States without a nuclear weapon.
Well, that's the lesson that Saddam seems to have drawn. I mean, his from all the indications we have, he's still trying to get nuclear weapons, and the Iranians, of course, are between the Pakistanis who have nuclear weapons on one side with the Iraqis on the other trying to get them, and so, and Israel not too far away. So it's easy to see why the Iranians, too, feel an appetite in that direction. The problem is, if everybody's appetite is satisfied and you get a whole Middle East full of nuclear weapons, I don't know how you ever achieve any kind of stability or peace.
Gary Mulholland, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Gary Mulholland, director of the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.